Welcome to the Math Ed Podcast. My name is Sam Otten from the University of Missouri, and a return guest today is Dr. Luis Leyva, who's an associate professor now of mathematics education and STEM higher education, still at Vanderbilt University. Luis, thanks so much for coming back on the podcast.
Thanks so much for welcoming me back.
We're going to be talking about a new article that Luis published in the Notices of the American Mathematical Society. It's in Volume 71, available online, and this article is entitled Queer of Color Justice in Undergraduate Mathematics Education. And so, Luis, I've been referring to the fact you're returning. You were back in 2017, episode 1701 of the podcast, and we were talking about some of your work and your theorizing about intersectionality in math education in particular, and thinking about STEM and how intersectionality functions and is important to consider in that space. And you have been advocating for students of color and queer and trans students in STEM and in math education. So people could listen back to that episode, but I also wonder here if you could remind us of some of the pedagogies, some of the existing ideas that have really influenced and shaped the way that you approach this work.
Definitely. Throughout my work, I center the lived experiences of historically marginalized students in mathematics and STEM broadly across different intersections of social differences, including race, gender, and sexuality. And so through this work, really leveraging counter-storytelling methodology from critical race theory of being able to center the lived realities of those who have been at the margins and valuing those forms of knowledge as ways to be able to transform educational systems and structures and society has allowed me as a researcher to begin to theorize what intersectional justice in undergraduate mathematics and in STEM higher education looks like. And so one of the pieces that's cited in the article that we're talking about today, the Notices article, is another piece where I've introduced a framework to the field around how STEM education operates as a white, cis-heteropatriarchal space. And this is an offering to the field of understanding how interrelated dimensions of how STEM education works can reinforce or potentially disrupt ideological forces that marginalize students, institutional forces as well, and relational forces. And so these are kind of interrelated dimensions that really either reinforce or disrupts how white cis heteropatriarchy operates in mathematical environments, but also in STEM broadly. And that framework was conceived of working alongside students who experience intersectional forms of marginalization, and also exhibit forms of agency to push back on these structures as well. And then the framework allows us to really understand how we might be able to examine these narratives or even examine practices and structures in educational spaces to be able to really establish learning opportunities that are affirming for students across intersections of race, gender, and sexual identities. And so that framework itself, in terms of like its theoretical underpinnings, is inclusive of intersectionality theory, women of color feminisms, including Black feminist epistemology. So thinking about the works of Patricia Hill Collins and bell hooks and Gloria Anzaldúa, Kimberly Crenshaw theorizing intersectionality, but also as well, in addition to that, bringing perspectives around queer of color critique. So like Roderick Ferguson's work in that area, work in the education, like Ed Brockenbrough's work, Lance McCready's work, Cindy Cruz, Kevin Kumashiro, and really bringing these kind of perspectives together along with queer crit. So thinking about how the off branch of critical race theory that really centers queer and trans people of color's experiences, how those perspectives kind of came together as a foundation for that framework. And so building off of the STEM education as a white cis heteropatriarchal space framework, that framework then ultimately led me to begin to think about pedagogy. So how is it that this framework can allow us to understand what pedagogical practices like curriculum, instruction in the classroom, student support practices, what does that actually look like to be affirming, and specifically thinking about this being affirming for queer and trans students of color in STEM? And so I ended up writing a piece alongside my co-authors, Taylor McNeil and Antonio Duran, in a separate piece that's in the Journal of Women and Minorities in Science and Engineering, where we presented a research agenda, a queer of color research agenda to the field that attends to curriculum instruction and student support practices, and it's linked to my framework of how STEM education operates as a white, cis, heteropatriarchal space to think about how could these practices in pedagogy be researched, but also what are the implications of being able to do this to expand opportunities for educational experiences that are affirming of queer of color realities. From there, I was thinking, well, STEM really is quite broad, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the notices article is tied to an invited lecture that I gave at the joint mathematics meeting for the Spectra Lavender lecture, which recognizes contributions by queer identifying mathematicians and math educators in the field. And so I started to think a lot about from the work around how does this kind of translate into mathematics that operates as a really unique discipline. And so because I was thinking about pedagogy and in thinking about this in relation to mathematics, I brought two perspectives in that piece together. So drawing on Kevin Kumashiro's perspective of anti-oppressive education that really thinks about what are some practices that interrogate cis heteronormativity or cis heteropatriarchy and anti-racist pedagogies, but also interrogates how whiteness might be embedded in anti-heterosexist practices. So really thinking about pedagogies that are intersectionally affirming for queer and trans students of color. And then bringing Brittany Mosby's perspective around liberated mathematics classrooms together with anti-oppressive education. So the anti-oppressive education piece brings an intersectional lens to the liberated mathematics classroom perspective, which that perspective actually was anchored around racial justice. And so it allowed me to begin to kind of use these two perspectives as a lens to understand queer and trans students of color's mathematics experiences with pedagogy, and thinking about how their experiences of either of encountering forms of marginalization, of finding forms of support, but also what are their agentic ways of moving within mathematical learning environments, how those perspectives could allow us to push back on the broader functions of STEM education as a white, cis, heteropatriarchal space.
So, you know, we can hear the thoughtfulness and the passion you have for this mission you've been working on for several years. I appreciate the opportunity to sort of make some connections of how your work has grown and built on other facets and coming together. And it's nice to see with this notices piece, too, of how you bring it to that mathematical audience as well. And in your broad mission of justice for queer trans people of color, or the queer of color justice, as you kind of, you know, refer to it, you have this project that is a centerpiece of the article in the notices. So I wonder if you could just let us know a little bit about that project, Queer Students of Color in STEM, and help us just make sure we wrap our head around that before we get into some other ideas from the article.
Sure. So the Queer Students of Color in STEM project is a multi-institutional project inclusive of five different U.S. universities and inclusive of 60 students who identify as queer students of color broadly, who are pursuing STEM majors at their universities. And so we finished the project itself, like in terms of data collection, has been brought to a close. But through this work, this project was trying to address some areas of inquiry in the field that I saw and that our team saw as being really under-theorized. And so one way is thinking about, you know, there's a lot of literature, there's an uptick in literature around issues of intersectionality in math education, or even in STEM higher education broadly. But when you look at, you know, whose experiences are brought to the fore in terms of understanding intersectional forms of agency and oppression in these spaces, we begin to see an oversight or an absence for queer and trans students of color. When you look at literature in higher education broadly, where queer and trans students of color are brought to the fore in terms of their experiences through an intersectional lens, we oftentimes see that academic aspects of their experiences, so being thinking about teaching and learning, thinking about pedagogy, and then specifically thinking about this in relation to STEM, is missing. And this is important, right? So, you know, when you're thinking about being a college student, your academic aspects of your experiences are really important to think that are kind of central to you being an undergraduate student. And so This was an opportunity to really begin to examine a space that is hugely influential for students, right? And then also thinking about the uniqueness of STEM in mathematical environments that have their own unique cultures, disciplinary cultures, right, that are manifesting in the ways that we think about what we value as educational practices, right? And so this was an opportunity to begin to make a contribution to the field around how do we begin to transform educational practices that affirm queer and trans students of color in mathematics and in STEM broadly, whose perspectives in these areas, whose intersectional realities in these areas, particularly in STEM environments, have not been theorized very robustly just yet. And so through the project, Queer Students of Color in STEM, again, 5 universities, 60 undergraduate student participants, we engaged in opportunities to really center their narratives through different opportunities, including reflective forms of journaling about po everyday positive and negative experiences that they've had as STEM learners, autobiographies where they get to look back retrospectively around influential people and places and spaces in their trajectories, including the unique role that mathematics plays, and then interviews. So really, sitting down with student participants and asking them about different dimensions around their experiences, what motivated them to pursue STEM, what does their queer of color identity mean to them in relation to just being a person in general, but then also how that manifests in terms of being in STEM environments, the role of family, and then also, how does family play a role? How do local communities play a role in their trajectories? And then the group interviews were particularly really refreshing to do because it was also an opportunity for students who either were pursuing STEM at their university or opportunities for students across different universities who are pursuing STEM to come together in dialogue about different issues around their intersectional realities. And so, many times in doing some of this work, it was an opportunity for students to be able to connect with one another during moments, during especially thinking about ways that you might feel particularly isolated and not even knowing if there's somebody out there who shares your identity pursuing a STEM major. And so that is the nature of the work in terms of the research project broadly. This work is done in collaboration with various graduate and undergraduate research assistants in my research lab at Vanderbilt called PRISM, which stands for Power, Resistance, and Identity in STEM Education. And so in many ways, and you will see this not just in our lab website, but also through publications that come out from the Queer Students of Color in STEM project, that I'm doing this work in community and so alongside student researchers. And so in many ways, students were involved in interviewing, involved in analyzing the data that we collected through the project, and then also engaged in lots of the writing processes to be able to disseminate some of the findings from our work.
That could be a whole nother study to look at how they are experiencing it, being part of the research team that's looking at this, and then in addition to the students who are the participants kind of in the main project itself. But if we go to the notices article, you sort of focus in on undergraduate mathematics as one part of STEM that you can talk about. And you lay out three approaches for advancing queer of color justice, specifically in that undergraduate mathematics context. And that's who you're kind of speaking to through the American Mathematical Society in the presentation and then in the article. So I wonder if you could give us the short version. People should grab the article and look at the detail, but give us the overview of what those three approaches are that you're sort of advocating for.
So the pedagogical vision that I lay out in this particular piece, there's three approaches that are laid out in this vision, and each of them address some aspect of undergraduate mathematics pedagogy. So, for example, if the first one is really centered around instructional practices. So that one is about empowering educators and student and learners in mathematics to interrogate ways that they might be complicit with systems of oppression. So where are they kind of sitting in relation to these power systems? And how is it that when they're engaging in terms of teaching practices or engaging in interactions as a learner in the classroom, in many ways, how are they constantly thinking about how their positioning within these systems is always at play? And how might they engage in agentic ways to really push back on some of these systems? You know, are there opportunities for learners and educators to use mathematics as a tool or as a lens to advance intersectional justice within the classroom? The second approach in this vision is more on the side of student support in relation to mathematics pedagogy. So this is about, this one speaks to this idea about creating a space of interactions that queer and trans students of color will experience as being affirming of their full identities in these spaces, as well as being positioned as contributors to mathematical forms of knowledge production in mathematics classrooms. And then the last one speaks to more of the curricular approach. And this one takes a stance on thinking about ways to decolonize your curriculum in undergraduate mathematics. And so in doing some of that, thinking about the ways in which contributions from queer and trans mathematicians of color, both in history, but also in the present day, are reflected in the curriculum. And also, what are ways that, you know, with problem solving playing such a central role in the fabric of mathematics teaching and learning, are there ways that there could be problem solving opportunities in the curriculum that are reflective of queer and trans students of color's lived realities or their commitments, their social commitments and their social experiences that they would be able to kind of engage as a mathematics learner, but bringing forth a sense of relevance around their identities while doing so?
Yeah, and I wonder if going back to the second one about the spaces, I wonder if you could share some examples of those spaces that you have seen, like from the larger project. And are they spaces that the students themselves sort of help to create? Or is it really one where it's like, no, the department, the institution, the faculty, like, should provide it for them? Or is it a little bit of both, like the students creating it, but also the institution trying to provide the means or the space to do that?
That's a great question. So in the article, I highlight two cases of counter stories from two participants. So we hear from Jay and we hear from Teresa in this particular piece. And I think in the spirit of trying to offer an example around the student support piece around the interactional space that would be fully affirming of queer and trans students of color's full identities, and also thinking about making space for them to contribute to mathematical knowledge, I think about Jay's case in particular. And so Jay identifies as a Colombian American gay male. He was pursuing a biological sciences major and is on the pre-med track. And so in Jay's experience, he reflected on his pre-calculus classroom experience where there was a lot of group work opportunities in the class. And in that particular space for Jay, he was coming to grips with the fact that as an emergent bilingual, speaking with an accent oftentimes brought forth moments where he felt as though there was less of an opportunity to connect with other students during group work opportunities, and thinking about the ways that his accent could be read as a way of signaling a lack of competence with mathematics. And in addition to him being an emergent bilingual in those spaces and kind of feeling as though he had limited access to build a sense of interconnectedness through collaboration and group work opportunities in this classroom space, he also was very conscious about his gender presentation. And so for him, as more of a feminine presenting gay male in this space, he was cognizant that the ways that he expressed his gender, which was coded in femininity, could oftentimes be linked and disassociated with mathematical ability when we think about the ways that we value masculine ways of presenting ourselves as being very assertive in the ways that we share our ideas, et cetera. And so for him, it was interesting because as a Colombian American gay male, he talked a lot about his upbringing in a family where there was this very cis heteronormative notion of what it means to be an upstanding man. And this is kind of anchored in these kind of culturally specific narratives of machismo. And so to be an upstanding man, you kind of have to, you know, maintain an upright posture, speak with a deep voice. And he was very aware of how these kinds of early teachings are anchored in cis heteronormative ways that we think about gender, but they're also ways that through family and through culture are allowing him to navigate in forms of survival in spaces, right? Where we think about how patriarchy kind of manifests, et cetera. And so he brings forth this tension that he sits with, that he found himself oftentimes in this interactional space in pre-calculus, to almost kind of engage in this narrative of he was channeling these machista ideals of speaking in a deep voice and holding an upright posture. And so kind of engaging in these masculine coded behaviors to self-protect himself from being slighted for his mathematical ability as a queer man of color. And so you can see that what I'm alluding to in terms of sharing Jay's counter story in a pre-calculus environment is that there was group work, a peer collaborative space that was intended to really provide students with more of an opportunity to engage in discourse, to engage in mathematical knowledge production, mm-hmm. that in some ways, through being an emergent bilingual and hearing him speaking with an accent and his access to the English language in this class, as in tandem with the ways that we organize what are valued forms of gender and gender expression in mathematical environments, in many ways really constricted his ability as a queer man of color to be able to form a sense of connectedness and have access to support from his peers while they were engaging in some mathematics learning together. And so in thinking about this broader pedagogical vision of queer of color justice in undergraduate mathematics, in this piece, I highlight Jay's counter story and also in elements of Teresa's counter story to be able to then signal what are ways that we might be intentional about the ways that we frame and that we structure collaborative learning opportunities like group work, where we actually do name that there's a lot of social diversity that could be present in these spaces. Are there ways that we build community early on in an academic semester that mitigates the ways that social diversity can actually then present itself as a blowback for queer and trans students of color who are trying to engage with their classmates in these collaborative learning opportunities? So what might be ways that there's a pedagogical responsibility coming from the instructor in creating a space that really allows students to not, like, for example, like Jay, to not feel as though they have to hold back on being able to express their full identities in these spaces and are feeling as though that they're kind of wholly invited to be able to engage in processes of mathematical knowledge production as a learner in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks so much for sharing that. And again, as people can probably tell in the article, there are other examples that illustrate and give us ways to think about the other of the approaches that you mentioned. So those three approaches laid out, illustrated, discussed in the article, I'm hoping people have a chance to check it out. I do want to ask you about what you're hoping to see as the impact of the article. So is there sort of a best case scenario of the impact that this article makes on undergraduate math education? Or another way maybe ask it is, like, where and how do you hope that this article gets used by folks?
I always think a lot about, like, you know, we engage in this research and, like, you know, you're hoping to be able, I mean, for me, I am trying to really motivate transformation in STEM higher education spaces, including undergraduate math classroom spaces. And so for me, when I think about the vision of, like, where does this ultimately land and how does it fit within the scope of where I want to see it go, I think of maybe like three areas. So I think one being how can insights from this article and then, like, the insights from the queer students of color and STEM project broadly, how can it reach faculty in higher education? So how can it reach faculty in the sense of providing learning opportunities for faculty? I think that there might be ways that faculty may opt in to really kind of engage in critical self-reflection of like ways that they may have really normalized what instructional practices or curricular design practices look like in their classrooms. Because a lot of times this is kind of tied to the dominant ways that we've like organized mathematics as a discipline that then ties into instructional practices or pedagogical practices broadly. And I think, could there be opportunities that work like this catalyzes some form of critical self-reflection for faculty to really think about, like, are there ways that I might be able to pivot what I'm doing in my classroom space that might be a little bit uncomfortable at first, but it might actually go a long way in terms of students being able to feel as though their identities are affirmed, that they have more space to engage as participants in the classroom, et cetera. I think the thing that ends up happening is that there might be a lot of ideological resistance to doing some of this, that maybe this is conceived of as not being relevant, and or, you know, thinking about how faculty may think about like it's not necessary to be able to do this right now if it's been working for them for many years. So I wonder about how institutions of higher education also hold faculty members accountable to engaging in some of this. Like, could this be embedded in faculty orientation and regular forms of training for faculty? So that way we're not necessarily relying on opt-ins opportunities to engage in equity-minded work for intersectional justice, but it's actually part of the fabric of what faculty are expected to do. Like, is this something that we can think about in terms of our metrics too? Like, when you're thinking about promotion practices or tenure, like, how are we kind of valuing these elements around equity and justice for the students that we're serving in our classrooms? And so that way it doesn't kind of feel as though this equity piece or this justice piece is an add-on or something you can opt into or out of in terms of your pedagogical responsibilities.
Yeah, and the training part of it I think is important too, because it sends the message that we all need to make efforts. We all need to try to get better in this area, because there might be some faculty who are really passionate, really invested in making these spaces and pursuing this justice. But then there might be others who are like, I'm not comfortable doing this. I feel like I'm going to mess it up. I might cause more harm than good. But it's sort of like, yeah, but you don't get off the hook. Like, then let's join this training. Let's get feedback. Let's try to improve. And so it sort of puts everybody on some sort of pathway towards, let's make this better than it has been in the past.
That's exactly right. I mean, I think that we can all start from wherever we're starting from. And even this could just be like when you're starting to engage in this whole journey of being more equity minded, it's never like you never really fully arrive in doing this work, right? It's always a continual process. And so even for folks who've already been thinking about it, there's always room to grow further. You know, I'm always thinking about how I'm engaging in my own classroom space and which students am I reaching, which students did I not reach today, and what are ways that I can kind of reflect on my practices to create more space for students to either have access to participating in whole class discussion or hearing their voices during small group work or creating opportunities for them to connect with other classmates, you know, things like of that nature. I think another piece too, in addition to faculty learning in terms of the impact of the piece, I think a lot about, you know, in terms of reaching out to do this work, we built connections with a lot of identity-based offices and centers across universities to be able to reach out to students and provide this opportunity to get involved with the research project. And so, you know, I think a lot about ways that this work can also not just inform like STEM departments or math departments, but how could this also support student affairs professionals or student support professionals who are working alongside students, whether that might be at the LGBTQ center or working at like the Black Cultural Center or other identity-based spaces of affinity and support for students. Because oftentimes we might think of those spaces as being inherently more social in nature. So maybe a lot of the programming or events that happen don't necessarily have an academic component to them. And so could there be ways that we incorporate some of what's happening in academic spaces as part of the support that we're providing for students who are coming from historically marginalized backgrounds who are finding spaces of support and affinity outside of these departments? And I think the same could be said around, offices and, well, offices as well as, maybe even student organizations as well that have more of an academic mission. So when you think about the Association for Mechanical Engineers, or when you think about the Computer Science Club, it has a more academic bend to it. But to what extent are we incorporating some issues around diversity and intersectionality in some of the ways that we design those spaces as well? And so maybe if we have faculty and staff in higher education learning from insights like this article to think about what they might be doing even in outside of the classroom spaces to support queer and trans students of color. And I think the last piece in terms of impact, I think about how this work can get into the hands of queer and trans students of color on campus. This could be a way that maybe students who are pursuing STEM majors at their respective institutions can see themselves. It could be maybe even a site for healing, a site for processing, maybe even a site for kind of feeling a sense of connectedness with someone who shares their intersectional identities. When I was earlier, in our conversation today, I talked about how there's been an absence around really beginning to understand the intersectionality of queer and trans students of color in mathematics and STEM broadly. And so could this be a disruption in the sense that it also provides a sense of an opportunity for students to kind of see themselves and also kind of learn from the realities for students who are also in STEM environments who share their identities, but also ways they might learn from these pieces of scholarship to feel empowered to maybe even change some of the norms around educational practices at their institutions.
That's excellent to hear about, and definitely are hoping for that impact in those various ways that you're talking about from this article. For yourself personally, I'm just wondering, what do you see as the next steps for you in this ongoing mission around queer students of color justice?
So the first thing I'm thinking a lot about and for our team is to be able to actually go back and share these findings with the university sites that we're partnered with. And so that we were able to share. And we've been kind of already engaging in some of these processes already as we kind of went along, but being able to circle back and share some of the insights from our work to really help stakeholders at these sites to improve educational practices. Data analysis. So now that the data collection is done, continuing to analyze our data and also disseminate data through written products as well as presentations for the field. And then hopefully, thinking a lot about, it's been an honor to work alongside the participants in this project to be able to kind of have an important responsibility as a researcher to learn from their lived realities to inform broader forms of change. Could there be ways through this qualitative work to be able to think about ways that we can build theory around quantitative measures around understanding what intersectional justice through pedagogy looks like? I'm thinking about could there be ways that we can develop maybe an instrument to be able to assess the ways that we're thinking about different pedagogical practices that are either serving or not serving queer and trans students of color in mathematics or in STEM more broadly. So really using some of the work that I've been doing from a more qualitative angle to really be starting to be able to scale some of this up at a more quantitative from a more quantitative perspective.
All right. Wonderful. I mentioned that you were a guest before you talked about running, that was something that you did quite a bit. And then you also had a dream of maybe being in a rock band. So I just want to check back in on that and see if you're still running or if you have started playing any instruments or anything.
I still identify as a runner. I have not been running as frequently as I did years ago. I want to be able to pick that back up. I still dream about the rock band. I also think about, I have a little bit of musical theater in me, which kind of ties in with the performance element of being in a band. So for now, recently just went to a show for Jagged Little Pill in Nashville. And so even that was a nice way of blending the musical theater side with the rock band element. And so that kind of keeps me going. I still listen to a lot of music on a regular basis, but I can still, I think I would say I would still dream of either being in a rock band or doing some element of musical theater if I wasn't doing the job that I'm doing right now. But I really love the work that I get to do, and I'm honored to do it. And so, but you know, one can always continue just having those like daydreams of performing, and that also kind of makes me happy.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Luis, it's been great talking to you again, and keep up the great work.
Thanks so much, Sam.